Hello and welcome to this, I'm going to say final Chess Pieces session. It isn't the final Chess Pieces session, but it is for this period of exploration of chess pieces, these particular pieces that we are sculpting with. This is the end of our first little saunter through various different scenes and subplots looking at adaptatory questions. We'll take a little bit of a break before we return with other questions about adaptation, about the nature of the play, about what it's about, and questions about what one does with a text, which throws up quite so many problematic elements that we might want to figure out what we want to do with that or what we should do about that. But today we're mostly continuing our quest to look at what might work or might not work in an audio adaptation, as well as later stage or other versions that we might do. Today we're mostly looking at a sort of hodgepodge of scenes from Act 4 onwards. We are primarily sauntering our way through the White Duke and White Knight subplot. The White Duke and the White Knight are going to go undercover. So they're going to infiltrate the Black House, the Black Pieces, and pretend that they're going to change sides in a way of trying to expose the nasty, wicked plots that the Black Chess Pieces have been doing. And we're going to see how that plot lands and see how it goes. We've got a few other little bits and pieces, a bit of tidying up to do as well, just because we're here and we have time. So reading today, The White Knight is...
Hi, I'm Greg, and I'm in the last throes of being 41 tonight.
Reading The White Duke is...
Hello, Lindsay Beecham here, actor in Scotland.
Reading The Fat Bishop and the Black Bishop's Pawn is...
Liza Graham, in London. Actor, singer, doer of many things, none of them particularly successfully. But we strive. That's the point, we strive.
Reading The Black Knight's Pawn, The Black Queen, maybe also The Black King. Various people may read The Black King. Don't get too attached to that as a role. Is...
Hi, this is Tom from Brighton.
And I'm your host, Robert Crichton. I'll be reading The Black Knight. I won't, by and large, be reading any stage directions. We're not going to be doing too much of that unless it's actually quite helpful. But a lot of the time, we're not going to do that. So a little bit of housekeeping first. We're going to look at the little subplot with The Black Knight and The Black Knight's Pawn that we've been dancing around across so many of these sessions as we look at Act 4, Scene 2. And... we have been looking at these various little things invading the room at this moment. We have Dan joining us.
Oh my gosh, when these dodgy people just invade your Zoom sessions.
Yeah.
Such a suspicious character.
Yeah, I don't know if I trust him. Dan, would you like a part?
I would, yes.
Be the Black King.
Okay.
As and when that appears, I may be able to throw something at you later. It's not a massive part in these sessions. Dan, would you like to introduce yourself to the listeners at home?
Yes, hello. I'm Dan. I'm an actor based in Montpellier, France.
Lovely. Okay. So we're going to dive into Act 4, Scene 2, and conclude our little look at the Black Knight's Pawn is feeling very guilty because he chopped someone's ghoulies off. So we're going to see how that resolves itself with the Black Knight. Pawn, I have spoke to the fat bishop for thee. I'll get the absolution from his own mouth. Reach me my chair of ease, my chair of cousinage. £7,000 in women, reach me that. I love a life to sit upon a bank of heretic gold. Oh, soft and gently, sirrah, there's a foul flaw in the bottom of my drum. Pawn, I ne'er shall make sound soldier, but sound treacher with any he in Europe. How now? Qualm? Thou hast the pukingest soul that e'er I met with. It cannot bear one suckling villainy. Mine can digest a monster without crudity, a sin as weighty as an elephant, and never wamble for it.
Aye, you've been used to it, sir. That's a great help. The swallow of my conscience hath but a narrow passage. You must think yet it lies in the penitent pipe, and will not down if I had got £7,000 by offices, and gulled down that, the bore would have been bigger.
Nay, if thou prov'st facetious, I shall hug, shall, nay, if thou prov'st facetious, shall, yeah, should be an I there. Nay, if thou prov'st facetious, I shall hug thee. Can a soft rear poor poached iniquity so ride upon thy conscience? I am ashamed of thee. Hast thou betrayed the White House to the black, beggared a kingdom by dissimulation, enjoined the fair frame of peace and traffic, poisoned allegiance, set faith back and wrought women's soft souls even up to masculine malice to pursue truth to death if the cause roused them that stares and parrots are first taught to curse thee?
Ah, marry, sir, here's swapping sins indeed.
All these, and 10 times trebled, hath this brain been parent to. They are my offsprings all.
A goodly brood.
Yet I can jest as lightly, laugh and tell stirring stories to court madams, daughters of my seducement, with alacrity as high and hearty as youth's time of innocence, that never knew a sin to shape a sorrow by. I feel no tempest, nor a leaf wind stirring to shake a fault. My conscience is becalmed, rather.
I'm sure there is a whirlwind hoofs in mine, sir.
Sirrah, I have sold the groom of the stole 6 times, and received money of 6 several ladies, ambitious to take place of baronet's wives. To 3 old mummy matrons, I have promised the mothership of the maids. I have taught our friends, too, to convey White House gold to our black kingdom in cold baked pasties, and so cousin searchers for venting hallowed oil, beads, medals, pardons, pictures, Veronica's heads in private presses, that's done by one in the habit of a peddler, letters conveyed in rolls, tobacco balls. When a restraint comes by my politic counsel, some of our Jesuits turn gentlemen ushers, some falconers, some park keepers, and some huntsmen. One took the shape of an old lady's cook once, the altar and the presser. Pray, what use put I my summer recreation to, but more to inform my knowledge in the state and strength of the White Kingdom? No fortification, haven, creek, landing place about the white coast, but I got draft and platform, learned the depth of all their channels, knowledge of all sands, shelves, rocks, and rivers for invasion, properest, a catalogue of all the navy royal, the burthen of each ship, the brassy murderers, the number of the men, to what cape bound. Again, for the discovery of the inlands, never a shire but the state better known to me than to her breast inhabitants. What power of men and horse, gentries, revenues, who well affected to our side, who ill, who neither well nor ill, all the neutrality, 38,000 souls have been seduced, pawn, since the jails vomited with the pill I gave them.
I'm sure you put oil of a toad into that physic, sir.
I am now about a masterpiece of play to entrap the White Knight, and with false allurements entice him to the Black House. More will follow. Whilst our fat bishop sets upon the queen, then will our game lie sweetly.
Here come now, sir.
Here's taxa penitentiaria. Knight! The book of general pardons of all prices. I've been searching for his sin this half hour and cannot light upon it.
Oh, that's strange. Let me see it.
Wretched that I am, hath my rage done that? There is no precedence of pardon for.
For willful murder, £13.04.6. That's reasonable cheap. For killing Catholics who stood for us and who, for such there were indifferent or against us. Killing. Why, here's nothing but killing, Bishop, on this side.
Turn the sheet o'er, and you shall find adultery and other trivial sins.
Adultery? Oh, I'm in now. For adultery, a couple of shillings, and for fornication, £0.05. Mass! These are two good pennyworths. I cannot see how a man can mend himself. For lying with mother, sister, or daughter. I marry, sir. £33.03.05. The sins. Gradation right, paid all in threes, too.
You've read the story of that monster, sir, that got his daughter, sister, and his wife of his own mother.
Simony, £5, £9.
They may thank me for that. It was 19 before I came. I've mitigated many of the sums.
Sodomy, £6. Yeah, you should put that sum ever on the backside of your book, Bishop.
There's few in us very forward, sir.
What's here, sir? Two old precedents of encouragement.
Those are ancient notes.
Given as a gratuity for the killing of an heretical prince with a poisoned knife? Ducats 5,000.
True, sir. That was paid.
Promised also to Dr. Lopez for poisoning the maiden queen of the White Kingdom, ducats 20,000, which said sum was afterwards given as a meretricious alms to the nunnery at Lisbon, having at this present £10,000 more at the use in the townhouse at Antwerp.
What's all this to my conscience, worthy holiness? I sue for pardon. I've brought money with me.
You must depart. You see, there is no precedent of any price or pardon for your fact.
Most miserable. Are fouler sins remitted? Killing, nay, willful murder.
True, there's instance. Were you to kill him, I would pardon you. There's precedent for that and price set down, but none for gelding.
I've picked out understanding now forever out of that cabalistic blood riddle. I'll make a way. Oh, sorry, it's not my line.
You're doing.
Sorry. It's quite important that it's your line. I was wondering why I was saying it. It was very confusing.
I've picked out understanding now forever out of that cabalistic bloody riddle. I'll make away all my estate and kill him, and by the act obtain full absolution.
And he exits, and that answers the riddle that we had the other day as to why he was suddenly randomly entering a scene and trying to kill someone, because it was explained earlier in a scene that we hadn't covered. Yes, this is basically a lengthy stand-up routine between various feed people and stuff. It's incredibly fun. I'm not sure about the opening, but the most of it is sort of fine and clear as to what's going on. I don't know if anyone else was unclear. I'm not quite sure what's going on about the whole chair of ease thing. He's got a golden chair and he likes fondling it. There's a hole in it, though, so it makes me wonder, is it a commode as well? I mean, it's slightly disturbing. Liza?
Yeah, the seat of ease was a word for a toilet, right? And it's very, you know, it's sort of metaphorically apt that he's sitting on the toilet while he's, talking about his moral corruption. And there's all these digestion metaphors in the speech he gives as well.
Doesn't he have a fistula or something? So maybe he can't sit down properly.
Maybe so.
Maybe it's the equivalent of having a sort of rubber ring for, you know, after pile surgery or something. You know, it's that kind of thing. You know, it's a private chamber, clearly, whatever he's doing. I mean, we could go emptying his bowels, as it were, during the scene. I don't know whether it's not really a black. It doesn't feel like a Black Knight thing to do, though, I have to say.
It's true. He's a little more self-possessed than some of the others, but like the toilet metaphor kind of asks for it. It's Chekhov's toilet. If you have a toilet on stage, it's going to get used.
Yeah. But as it's that question of it's a visual thing, and I'm wondering whether that's the opening bit is not going to necessarily land, even if we explain it, that maybe we need to just jump into the primary thing of this unit of action, which is just straightforwardly the Black Knight's pawn is going to go and do some murdering because he can't get remittance for his sins for gelding the other chap. Greg.
Sorry, I'm using trusty murder weapon. Apparently, the Duke of Gondomar, who I'm assuming is the character, the person who this is supposed to be who's speaking, apparently had a specific chair which allowed him to sit comfortably despite his painful fistula.
So it's a topical reference. And therefore,
which will get lost on 99.99%.
It's fine if it sort of fits with him, but you know, it gives an actor a thing to do throughout the whole play, as you know, a slight awkwardness to his walk, perhaps. The suggestion of venereal disease as well. So all sorts of potential problems there. Dan.
The image I'm getting is of from Key Largo, Edward G. Robinson in a bathtub. And with a cigar whilst his minions come in and he gives them orders from there. It's his position of power, in other words, just, I don't know, that he just sat there and doing something, whatever he's doing, you know that he's the one in charge, essentially. And it doesn't matter how odd a choice it is there. Mm. And I think that, yes, there might be some humor in it, but I think more of when you're the boss, you can wear whatever you want, you can do whatever you want, and everyone's going to listen to you.
Yes, the high-status person doesn't care what they look like because they know they're in charge.
Right.
Okay, so lots of great material in there. Question whether some of it will read for audio, but on the whole, at least narratively, it's relatively straightforward. Liza?
Yeah, the last thing I wanted to point out is that the Black Knight's speech about infiltrating the White Kingdom basically gives a voice to Elizabethan nightmares their country was, you know, the enemy within their country was being infiltrated by Jesuits who were spies. And then later on, there's a couple of topical references, one to the murder of Henri Quatre, in Paris, for being too Protestant. And the second to the purported attempted murder of Elizabeth by Dr. Lopez, her physician. So, you know...
It's hardly topical because it was about 40 years earlier. It's a historical reference, if anything.
You're right, a historical reference.
Because he's going, oh yeah, we did that one, didn't we? Yeah, do you remember when we arranged that? You know, because we had to invest the gratuity because he died, so we invested it in some nuns. we will move on. I say this scene doesn't leave us with too much territory. It has also mentioned in passing the turning of the White Knight and the White Duke. We're going to have a little bit more of that in the last few lines of this little bit. So we have the exit of the Black Knight's pawn. We have the entrance of the Black King. We'll just read the last few lines and see if there's anything there that is useful or not.
Why, Bishop, Knight, where are your removes, your traps? Stand you now idle in the heat of game?
My life for yours, Black Sovereign. The game's ours. I have wrought underhand for the White Knight and his brave Duke and Findham coming both.
Then for their sanctimonious queen's surprisal, sir, in that state puzzle and distracted hurry, trust my arch subtlety with.
Oh, eagle pride. Never was game more hopeful of our side.
If Bishop Bull Beef be not snapped next bout, as the men stand, I'll never trust art more. Yeah, it's the king just turns up to, asking for a situation report, really. The Black King does so little in this play. Everything he's done is in his name, but he really isn't a functioning character, per se. It feels like he should be on speakerphone or something. He's just going, "You done anything yet?"
Kind of like the chess piece itself.
Yeah, he's useless. Yeah, he can't move.
Sterile, yeah.
It's not like the Black Queen does anything either, to be fair. It's all this the intermediaries, but the lower below. Lindsay.
So that's just given me an image of like the Black King as a sort of Dalek with an electronic voice who sort of rolls on, says stuff, and then rolls off again in a stage version, obviously.
So, I mean, in a sense, it doesn't matter that we haven't really identified in the audio, you know, the Black King as a voice that we listen for, because they immediately explain, you know, say who he is. We could just add a little additional Your Majesty in there or something just to make it really clear. And then the drivers of the rest of that dialogue is people we know and know very well. So, no, that scene works very nicely. I don't think there's much needed beyond the odd trim, potentially, of the opening, and a few more missives so we know who's talking. Any additional thoughts, Dan?
No, I like that idea that Lindsay just brought up. It reminds, I don't know why I'm picturing or listening to the voice of, what is it, Sark and Tron. Just as while everyone else is doing something, you got this crazy booming like, voice going on, and it just tells you supposedly who's in charge there, even if they're not really.
We have the next scene we're skipping because it's a dumb show, and oddly enough, dumb shows aren't great on audio. It's a separate plot line anyway. So now we're really going to dig into the White Knight, the White Duke. They've said some dialogue in the play, but they haven't really made an impact. They've had a few lines here and there. So the White Knight and the White Duke now have vaguely hinted that they're about to do what they're about to do now. Let's see what their dialogue gives us and how they effectively introduce themselves to us in the play.
True, noble Duke, fair virtue's most endeared one, let us present their rank insinuation with truth of cause and courage, meet their plots with confident goodness that shall strike them grovelling.
Sir, all the gins, traps, and alluring snares the devil hath been at work since 88 on are laid for the great hope of this game only.
Why, the more noble will truth's triumph be, when they have wound about our constant courages the glittering serpent that e'er falsehood fashioned, and glorying most in his resplendent poisons, just heaven can find a bolt to bruise his head.
Look, would you see destruction lie a-sunning? In yonder smile sits blood and treachery basking, in that perfidious model of face, falsehood hell is drawn grinning.
What a pain it is for truth to feign a little.
Oh, fair knight, the rising glory of that house of candour, have I so many protestations lost? Lost? Lost, quite lost. Am I not worth your confidence? I that avowed the faculties of soul, life, spirit, and brain to your sweet game of youth, your noble, fruitful game. Can you mistrust any foul play in me that have been ever the most submissive observer of your virtues? and no way tainted with ambition, save only to be thought your first admirer. How often have I changed for your delight the royal presentation of my plays into a mimic gesture, and become for your sake the expulsion of sad thoughts of a grave state sire, a light son of pastime, made 80 years, a tomboy, a mere wanton. I'll tell you what I told a Savoy dame once. New-wed, high-plump, and lusting for an issue. Within the year I promised her a child, if she could strive over St. Rumbunt's breeches. A relic kept at Mechlin. The next morning, one of my followers, old Hose, was conveyed into a chamber where she tried the feat. By that and a court friend, after grew great.
Why, who could be without thee?
Oh, I will change to any shape to please you, and my aim hath been to win your love in all this game.
Thou hast it nobly, and we long to see the Black House pleasure, state, and dignity.
Of honour you'll so surfeit and delight, you'll ne'er desire again to see the white. they exit. Other scene occurs. Okay, so it's important at the top of the scene we know what the White Duke and the White Knight are doing. Did that come across from the dialogue that we had there? I mean, we've had hints of it earlier, but it just flies past so quickly and it's so opaque. Let us present their rank insinuation with the truth of cause and courage. It does say it, but it doesn't say it very clearly. I worry. But that said, we've had this game before where we get the exposition a little later on that's really clear. So maybe he'll do that game again. Middleton does this sort of backward exposition thing. Liza?
I think the White Knight's last speech before the Black Knight's entrance is pretty clear about their intentions. That it does, looked at pretty clearly, it does say what their goal is.
What a pain it is for truth to feign a little, yes.
Oh, no, why the more noble will truth's triumph be? Or am I looking at the next scene? I could be just hallucinating.
Oh, well, no, I see the line. You're in the right scene. I'm just, it's not landing for me, really, as exposition.
I don't know, if it were spoken with enough conviction, enough sincerity.
Well, we will try that exercise again in just a moment. And we'll see how that goes. The Black Knight seems very straightforward because, of course, he's just going, I'm your host. I will do anything for you. Look at all the worldly pleasures we can get you. We can get people to do anything because we're so cunning and lovely. There's a lot of good stuff in there. I quite like St. Rumbut's breeches. I think that's... a nice little gag. Yeah, I like that. So his game's straightforward. It's obviously, the important thing is he's got to think he's gulling them, whereas they're gulling him. It would be quite nice if they had little asides in the middle of his speech or anything like that, just, going, is this the best he can do, or something like that.
Lindsay had her hand up.
Oh, Lindsay.
Yeah, sorry, no, I just, perhaps I was carefully brought up, but I'm not really sure what this story about St. Rumbunt's actually means this woman actually did. It wasn't quite clear to me, sorry to be.
No, it's absolutely, absolutely fine. So in this, it's straightforwardly a fake, or potentially fake. I mean, I don't know. It sounds like one of these made up saintly relics Yeah. But if you can, you can stride over them. Then
what does that? What does that mean to stride over a relic?
Just step over them.
Just step over them, and that.
The implication here is that if you that their sex occurs in as part of the whole thing there.
So she's stepping over a fake holy relic, which is the follower's old hose. She's stepping over that in order to become fertile, and then but not actually pregnant. So it's not a sort of immaculate conception. It's
no, because the Black Knight has sex with her. I think that's basically what's going on here.
Basically, yeah, and she does get pregnant. Yeah.
So the knight is the court friend.
Mm.
Thank you.
I don't know that. I was just asking.
That seems to be what it's hinting at. So he's just going, look, here is this relic. I'll bring it round to your room late at night. You know, you just have to step over my britches and you'll be fine. So that's the thing, is the when he's saying Rombart's britches, it might just be his own britches that he's dropped. And therefore she strides over them.
Marvellous. Thank you very much for clarifying that actual event.
Again, this is one where some actions would be helpful. Greg?
What is going on? I must admit, I've forgotten what their plot is.
They're infiltrating the Black House. And the Black Knight is welcoming them to the fold. That's all that's happening. But if we're not clear on that front, because, I mean, this is the thing, is apart from the previous scene that we've just done where he says we're going to invite the White Jews and the White Knight in, that's pretty much, and there's an earlier scene where, broadly speaking, the White Knight and the White Duke say, we might need to do something to get at the Black House. We haven't really been given that much more in the play. This is mostly it. So this scene, it's quite important for it to land, because if it doesn't land, you might not know what's going on. At least it follows on very quickly after the previous scene. So if at the end of the last scene, in fact, we'll run the end of the last scene into the beginning of this scene and see how it runs. And see if that gives us the kick to make us follow what's going on. That seems like a plan. We'll go from the Black King's entrance. Dan, I'm going to ask you to read the Black Knight this time, because, you know, I want to watch what everyone else is doing. So I'll read the Black King. Actually, no. Tom, you've just exited. You read the Black King. That'll be fine. So we'll go from just before Act 4, Scene 4, the entrance of the Black King, and then run effectively straight into Act 4, Scene 4, and see whether everything falls more into place. Is that clear for everyone?
So when Black King enters, why? Bishop, Knight, where are you removed?
Yeah.
Okay.
So Tom will read the Black King, you'll read the Black Knight, everyone else remains who you were. Okay. Anyone not ready? Lovely. Okay. Black King, take it away.
Why, Bishop, Knight, where's your removes, your traps, and stand you now idle in the heat of a game?
Oh, my life for yours, Black Sovereign. The game's ours. I have wrought underhand for the White Knight, and his brave Duke can find him coming both.
Then for their sanctimonious queen's surprisal, sir, in that state puzzle and distracted hurry, trust my arch subtlety with.
Oh, eagle pride, never was game more hopeful of our side.
If Bishop Bullbeef be not snaps next bout as the men stand, I'll never trust Arthur.
Noble Duke, fair virtue's most endeared one, let's present their rank insinuation with truth of cause and courage, meet their plots with confident goodness that shall strike them grovelling.
Sir, all the gins, traps, and alluring snares the devil hath been at work since 88 on are laid for the great hope of this game only.
Why, the more noble will truth's triumph be when they have wound about our constant courages the glitteringst serpent that e'er falsehood fashioned, and glorying most in his resplendent poisons. Just heaven can find a bolt to bruise his head.
Look, would you see destruction lie a-sunning? In yonder smile sits blood and treachery basking, in that perfidious model of face, falsehood, hell is drawn grinning.
What a pain it is for truth to feign a little.
Oh, fair knight, the rising glory of the House of Candor, have I so many protestations lost, quite lost? Am I not worth your confidence? I that have vowed the faculties of soul, life, spirit, and brain to your sweet game of youth, your noble, fruitful game. Can you mistrust any foul play in me that have been ever the most submiss observer of your virtues, and no way tainted with ambition, save only to be thought your first admirer? How often have I changed for your delight the royal presentation of my place into a mimic jester? May come for your sake the expulsion of sad thoughts, of grave state sire, light of sun pastime. May 80 years a tomboy, a mere wanton. I'll tell you what I told a Savoy dame once, new wed, high, plump, and lusting for an issue. Within the year, I promised her a child. If she could stride over St. Rumbin's breeches, a relic kept at Mechlin, the next morning, one of my followers' old host was conveyed into her chamber, where she tried the feat by that and a court friend, after grew great.
Why, who could be without thee?
I will change to any shape to please you, and my aim hath been to win your love and rule this game.
Sit nobly. We long to see the black house pleasure, state, and dignity.
Of honor, you're so surfeit and delight, you'll ne'er desire again to see the white. Ho!
No, it's all right. It's all right. We're not jumping onto the next scene. Okay. Bits of that were clearer. I think one of the straightforward things actually is, you know, when the White Knight's there saying, "Let us present their rank insinuation." We just need, you know, to make it clear that there is the Black House. You know, let us present the Black House's rank insinuation with truth of, you know, that kind of thing. They don't really identify who they are clearly enough, but that's solvable as well. I'm starting to think about there's a lot of potential where we slightly move scenes around and slightly reorder material, that even that whole sort of stand-up routine bit that we had earlier could actually be moved to somewhere slightly different, and we just start with the king enters, are you ready for the next scene, and the next scene runs straight in here, that we don't have the other plots dumb show happening in between them, because we don't need it. Actually, the White Knight, the White Duke, just comes straight on, and they interact. That works quite nicely because it's following the thought straight on, and there's less exposition to do. Lindsay?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. And I think the Black Knight's line in that little bit beforehand saying, the game's ours, I have wrought underhand for the White Knight and his brave Duke, and find 'em coming both. It's almost as if, I mean, coming in this... in that bit means that, you know, they're about to turncoat, but it is also an entrance line for them, and would highlight, well, visually, maybe not aurally, that they are the two being discussed. So
that's really nice that we slightly maybe trim some of the stuff that follows, and maybe go straight to the White Knight, White Duke, and then we have a really clear connection. Though I don't think we can remove the sanctimonious Queen surprise, because that's quite important for a scene that we're not looking at in these sessions at the moment. Trim to that. Other thoughts? I think that actually means that we can maintain the cohesion of the text with by moving bits of it around without having to make major sort of surgical interventions, which is nice. I like that. I don't like making interventions if we can avoid it. Okay, so any other thoughts in the room before we move on to Act 5, Scene 1? No, some other stuff happens in between. There's a scene in between with the White Queen and the Fat Bishop, which we're not that fussed about in terms of what we're doing on here. But what we have now is this great display of lovely things for the edification of these two, in theory, marks, as it were, the White Knight and the White Duke. Now, the precise people doing some of this and the stuff that comes in here, we might move around a bit. Black Bishop's Pawn, I don't know how how good your Latin narration will be. But yes, there's music, there's Latin. Liza.
Well, we'll just see, won't we?
Yes, I'm just warning the audience that we've just randomly handing rather a lot of Latin. meanly, without any prep. Yes, and hasn't necessarily been properly proofed either, so there could be some faulty bits in there. I've already tripped over a few bits of slightly awkward bits in English, so yeah. Yes, we'll read on. Dan, I'll ask you to continue being the Black Knight. I'll be the Black King. And that should mean we can move into this reasonably well. So there's music. So that's nice. We haven't really had that many music cues in the text. So that's saying that audio does quite well, oddly enough. So that's quite nice. Black Bishop's Pawn is discovered a bit above. We haven't seen the Black Bishop's Pawn with the rest of these lot for a while. He's been doing his own subplot. So it's interesting he's back in the fold. Obviously, that's a visual thing that we're not going to get, and I wonder if the Black Bishop's Pawn's role in this scene is going to be apparent in an audio version. I don't think it matters who's doing the psalming. Not the psalming, the Latining. Anyway, the Black Knight enters in his litter as passing in haste over the stage. Again, that may not be apparent. But anyway, let's see what happens. Let's find out how the dialogue flows. Let's see what's going on. So, Black Knight, take it away.
Ho! Ho! Is the Black Bishop's Pawn the Jesuit planted above for his concise oration?
Ecce triumphantis me fixum Caesaris arse!
Art there, my holy boy? Sirrah, Bishop Tumbril is snapped in the bag by this time.
Hereticae pereant sic!
Oh, Latin! Sure, the oration has infected him. Away, make haste, they're coming.
And more music while we are entertained and everybody enters.
Si quid mortalibus unquam oculis hilarem et gratum aperuit diem, si quid peramantibus amicorum animis gaudium atulit perpetive imitiam, eques candidissime, praeluentissime felicem profecto tuum ad domo candoris, ad domum nigritudinis, accessum promissise, peperise, atulise fatemur, omnes adventus tui conflagrantissimi, omni qua possumus laetitia, gaudio, congratulazione, acclamazione, animis observantissimis, affectibus devotissimis, obsequiis venerandibus, te sospitem, congratulamur.
Sir, in this short congratulatory speech, you may conceive how the whole house affects you.
Bulges and sanctimonious seed plots.
It is clear and so acknowledged, royal sir.
What honours, pleasures, rarities, delights your noble thought can think.
your fair eye fixed on. That's comprehended in the spacious circuit of our black kingdom. There your servants all.
How amply you endear us.
They are favours that equally enrich the royal giver as the receiver in the free donation.
And there's more music, and an altar is discovered. Loving, there's a visual thing that helps everything.
Hark, to enlarge your welcome. From all parts is heard sweet-sounding airs. Abstruse things open of voluntary freeness. And yon altar, the seat of adoration, seems to adore the virtues you bring with you.
There's a taste of the old vessel still.
The erroneous relish.
And now we have a song which might be sung actually by the Black Queen debate. But anyway, Tom, if you could speak the song for us, please.
Is this wonder work?
Yes.
Strange. Wonder work, some strange delight. This place was never yet without. To welcome the fair White House night, to bring our hopes about. May from the altar flames aspire, those tapers set themselves on fire. My senseless things our joys approve, and those brazen statues move, quickened by some power above. Or what more strange to show our love?
And there are flames rising from the altar. Tapers take fire, and the images move in a dance.
A happy omen waits upon it this hour. I'll move portentously the right-hand way.
Come, let's set free all the most choice delights that ever adorned days or quickened nights. Okay, this is not a complicated scene to adapt for audio at all. It's not based on lengthy visual things to enrapt the attention of the White Knight and the White Duke. So this is basically a welcoming party mask kind of thing, saying how wonderful that these two guys are. They've gone behind the velvet rope in the club, haven't they? They're in the VIP zone. How do we convey this stuff? The music's there, we have got obviously, but that latter end, when in theory there's a visual dimension, yes, we can have the sound of flames, but it doesn't really explicate what's going on there. To a degree it doesn't matter, we could truncate it, and it's not essential that we go into the level of detail there. We just need to give the impression that they've been welcomed effusively. But thoughts in the room about that? How do we translate this into an audio medium? Liza?
The song and the music would work quite well. I like the cue for loud music. This is not just a volume thing. There were specific loud instruments, reeds, brass, shawms, cornets, drums, things like that. Soft music is strings, mostly. So loud music is sort of triumphal procession-type music. And then the song presumably would be accompanied by something a bit softer. Even though it wouldn't work in an audio setting, I do like the images moving in a dance. This being... Protestants are very anti-graven images. At the Reformation, a lot of churches had their images of saints and knocked over, and their painted walls whitewashed so that there would be no images. I'm just kind of wondering who the images are of, because that could be hilarious. Like if one were Saint Sebastian or something, and he's like naked and full of arrows and like voguing, that would be kind of fun. Anyway,
Yeah, you know, when they come in, they've got, you know, the heavy duty dance music's playing, and then the cabaret singer comes on and sings towards the end. I'm being facetious now. I think there's enough here. The music is probably enough to carry the sort of the general sense of the scene, even if the specific stuff disappears. But then again, that's not the end of the world. I don't know whether it doesn't do any harm. I do find that it's the Black Bishop's pawn doing the oration. He does get a really nice bit of joke Latin at the top, though, getting to say arse. It's always nice. And making this excessively effusive Latin, you know, saying that you're full of joy and rejoicing, and isn't it great that you're here, and we venerate you and stuff. I wonder whether we just actually have a running translation from the Swedish jury or whatever, the audience knows what the hell it means, because otherwise it's just some noises are being spouted, Lindsay.
Well,
yes, I mean, I was just about to say something like that. Is there a sort of, you know, when they have on the news sometimes people speaking in a non-English language, and they fade the original voice out and they fade in the actor who's doing the translation into English, sort of, but you can still hear the original kind of slightly in the background. And I just wonder whether something like that might work or in an audio way, especially if, because forgive me, I have no Latin, if the Black Bishop's pawn is describing what is going to happen.
Which... It's not so much that he's basically making this speech saying it's welcome to our lovely Gath. You're wonderful, aren't you wonderful? I wonder whether a sort of a certain amount of, in Latin, then someone the Black Knight goes, thank you very much for having us, and there's almost a competition as to who performs you know, the Latin and the translation. At the there might be a game to be played between a translation in competition with the Latin. Liza,
I don't know. I mean, in the name of simplicity, all of these are good ideas and have a lot of playful potential, but in the name of simplicity, there's an argument for letting the Latin stand as long as it's spoken with an understanding of its meaning. That because this is a play in part about Catholicism and Protestantism, the sound of Latin was very much associated with Catholicism and the old rite, because Protestant services were done in English. So, you know, there's a reason that, for example, Dr. Faustus's invocations to his demons are all in Latin. It was viewed as a sort of ritualistic, mystical, maybe darkly magical language. So, yeah, there's something about the sound of Latin that adds to the sort of caricature of Catholicism that this scene presents.
Yes, because it is a joke. I mean, to a degree, it doesn't matter, because the joke is, sir, in this short congratulatory speech. So if the Black Bishop's pawn is ridiculously over the top and stretches everything out, then that's there. But it's a question of clarity of what's going on. And I'm always there in terms of just making sure that we're not completely lost there. So I might want to hedge my bets in terms of recording and one and then the other and seeing how it comes into the mix. Tom?
And I think for a certain generation, all you'd need is the title music to Tales from the Unexpected. You know, that thing? and you've got the flames and you've got the writhing in the flames.
Yeah, yeah. I'd go with that. Dan?
Just to add on to what Liza is saying, I mean, absolutely the joke is there, because the Black Knight is singing all Latin at first, and I don't think he's happy about it. And then afterwards says short congratulatory speech. You know, maybe it is short, but in the scheme of things they're having to listen to it, it didn't sound short.
No, it's not short. It is clearly a ridiculously long speech for high.
Right, which is why I think, which is to me a good argument for keeping it and keeping it all, actually.
Well, I'm not saying cutting any of it. I'm arguing for is making it longer, because if you have a translation match with it, it becomes excessive and actually it maybe enhances the joke as well. Unless the joke is the white knight and the white duke, basically their response to that is, yes, we understood all of that, didn't we? Yes. Because the whole thing is over the top and ridiculous. It's this ridiculously effusive mask type situation here that they are caught in the middle of, and confusion reigns. Okay, any other thoughts? So we think, we might lose something in it, but overall that's probably fine, so long as we make it sound exciting and over the top. We're fairly clear who everybody is. I don't think the song has to be the Black Queen. In fact, I think that's horribly speculative, and I'm going to ignore that. I'm just going to put Singer. Right. Act 5, Scene 3. So another scene has happened in between, involving the white Queen's pawn and the Black Queen's pawn and the various taking of pieces. So while all of this is happening, actually, in between these scenes, everything's going wrong for the Black House, actually. They just don't know it. So actually, there's some interesting stuff going on there about structure. So I've got to be a bit careful with moving scenes around, not to ruin that sense of actually their own sense of security being actually false. So Act 5, Scene 3, of which we'll do a reasonable chunkette of, because it's not a short scene. This is the meat of it all. The White Knight and the White Duke are basically going to lull the Black Knight into giving up the truth, as it were, about everything. Dan, would you like to continue being the Black Knight?
Sure, yes, please.
Excellent. I will continue being the Black King, and we'll see how this stands. So this is the final scene of the play. This is the final gambit. It's the final initiation of the White Knight and the White Duke in their into everything. They've just been to a marvellous party. We'll see where it goes. So on stage is the Black King, the Black Queen, the Black Knight, the Black Duke, the Black Bishop, the White Knight, and the White Duke. So most of the black pieces and these two white pieces.
You have enriched my knowledge, Royal Sir, and my content together.
Instead of riot, we set you only welcome. Surfeit is a thing that's seldom heard of in these parts.
Here is the more virtue when I miss on it.
We know not use to bury our bellies 200,000 ducats and then boast on't, or exercise the old Roman painful idleness with care of fetching fishes far from home. The golden-headed Choresine out of Egypt, the Sapa from Ebesus, or the Pelamis, which some call summer whiting from Chalcedon, salmons from Aquitaine, helops from Rhodes, cockles from Chios, franked and fatted up with far and supper of flour and cocked wine. We cram no birds, nor Epicurean like enclosed some creeks of the sea as Sergius Orata did. He that invented the first stews for oysters and other sea fish, who besides the pleasure of his own throat, got large revenues by the invention, whose fat example the nobility followed. Nor do we imitate the arch gormandizer with 22 courses at one dinner, and betwixt every course he and his guests washed and used women, and sat down and strengthened, lust swimming in their dishes, which no sooner was tasted but was ready to be vented.
Most impious Epicures.
We commend, rather, of two extremes, the parsimony of Pertinax, who hath had half lettuces set up to serve again, or his successor Julian, that would make three meals of a lean hare and often sup with a green fig and wipe his beard as we can. The old bewailers of excess in these days complained there was more coin bid for a cook than for a warhorse. But now, cooks are purchased after the rate of triumphs, and some dishes after the rate of cooks, which must needs make some of your White House gormandizers, especially your wealthy plump plebeians, like the hogs, which Scaliger cites, that could not move for fat, so insensible of either prick or goad, that mice made holes to needle in their buttocks, and they ne'er felt them. There was once a ruler, Cyrene's governor, choked with his own paunch, which death-fat Sanctius, king of Castile, fearing through his infinite master belly, rather chose to be killed suddenly by a pernicious herb, taken to mean him make him lean, which old Cordoba, king of Morocco, counseled his fear to, that he would hazard to be stumped to death as a huge cormorant that would choke before him.
Well, you're a sounder spokesman, sir, for parsimony, clean abstinence, and scarce one meal a day, as ever spake with tongue.
Censure him mildly, sir. 'Twas but to find discourse.
He'll raise it of anything.
Be half afraid to feed hereafter.
Or I beshrew my heart, for I fear fatness, the fog of fatness, as I fear a dragon. The comeliness I wish for, that's as glorious.
Your course is wondrous strict. I should transgress, sure, were I to change my side, as you've much wrought me.
Are you misprized? This is not meant to you, Ward. You that are wound up to the height of feeding by clime and custom are dispensed with all. You may kid, cabrito, calf, and tons. Eat and eat every day, twice if you please. Nay, the Frankish hen fatted with milk and corn, a ride which the inhabitants of Delos were first invented of, or the cracked cockle.
Well, food I'm happily resolved, but for the diet of my disposition, there comes a trouble. You will hardly find food to please it.
Oh, it must be a strange nature. We cannot find a dish for having policy, the master cook of Christendom to dress it. Pray, name your nature's diet.
The first mess is hot ambition.
That's but served in puff paste. Alas, the meanest of your cardinal's cooks can dress that dinner. Your ambition, sir, can fetch no further compass than the world?
Certain, sir.
Ha! We're about that already. And in the large feast of our vast ambition, we count but the white kingdom whence you come from, the garden for our cook to pick his salads, the foods lean France, larded with Germany, before which comes the grave, chaste signoria of Venice, served in capon-like in white broth, from our chief oven, Italy, the baked meats, Savoy, the salt, Geneva, the chipped manchet. Below the salt, the Netherlands are placed. A common dish at lower at the table, for me to pride to fall to. For our second course, a spit of Portugals, served in for plovers, Indians and Moors for blackbirds. All this while Holland stands ready melted to make sauce on all occasions. When the voider comes, and with such cheer, our four hopes we suffice. Zealand says for fashion, and we rise.
Here's meat enough in conscience for ambition.
If there be any want, there's Switzerland, Polonia, and such pickled things will serve to furnish out the table.
You say well, sir. But here's the misery. When I've stopped the mouth of one vice, there's another gapes for food. I am as covetous as a barren womb, the grave, or what's more ravenous.
Wherefore you, sir? Call you that heinous, that's good husbandry. Why, we make money of our faith, our prayers. We make the very deathbed buy her comforts. No, most dearly pay for all her pious counsels. Leave rich revenues for a few weak orisons, or else they pass unreconciled without them. Did you but view the vaults within our monasteries? You'd swear them, Plutus, whom the fiction calls the Lord of Riches, were entombed there.
Is it possible?
Who cannot walk for tons?
But how shall I bestow the vice I bring, sirs? You quite forget me. I shall be shut out by your strict key of life.
Is yours so vile, sir?
Some that are pleased to make a wantonant call it infirmity of blood, fresh frailty, but certain there's a worse name in your books for it.
The trifle of all vices, the mere innocent, the very novice of this house of clay, venery. If I but hug thee hard, I show the worst on't. 'Tis all the fruit we have here after supper. Nay, at the ruins of a nunnery once, 6,000 infants' heads found in a fish pond.
How?
How? How came they hither, think you? Huldric, Bishop of Augsburg, in epistle to Nicholas I, can tell you how. Maybe he was at cleansing of the pond. I can but smile to think how it would puzzle all mother maids that ever lived in those parts to know their own child's head. Is this all?
Are you ours yet?
One more and I am silenced. But this that comes now will divide us, questioners. 'Tis 10 times worse than the foreigners.
Is it so vile? There's no... Oh, yes. Is it so vile there's no name ordained for it? Toads have their titles, and creation gave serpents and adders those names to be known by.
This, of all the others, bears the hiddenest venom, the smoothest poison. I'm an arch dissembler, sir.
How?
Nature's brand. Turn from me, sir. The time is yet to come that ere I spoke what my heart meant.
And call you that a vice? Avoid all profanation, I beseech you. The only prime state virtue upon earth, the policy of empires. Oh, take heed, sir, for fear it take displeasure and forsake you. 'Tis like a jewel of that precious value whose worth's not known but to the skillful lapidary, the instrument that picks open princes' hearts and locks up ours from them with the same motion. You never came so near our souls as now.
Now you're a brother to us.
What we have done has been dissemblance ever.
There you lie there. And the game's ours. We give thee checkmate by discovery, king, the noblest mate of all.
I'm lost. I'm taken. Okay. I'm going to ask a question, actually. I wasn't going to ask this session, but we asked in the previous session when we were doing big scenes, where the primary question was, who's feeling redundant? Who feels like their character isn't really necessary? Hi, Lindsay!
Yes. I don't know. I mean, yeah, the White Duke.
That's bugger all.
Yes, it's hard to really know. I mean, I guess it adds weight to the idea that they're going to pull two of the white, House of the White, over into the House of the Black. But
yeah, I mean, you are basically the companion. You're there for the White Knight to explain stuff to, and just to be there. The point is, for an audio adaptation, if we can actively drop characters because with scenes where a reasonable number of people are about, it becomes very difficult to figure out who's who. It's like here we've got the Black Duke. The Black Duke is not going to be in this scene. It's going to be the Black King, because the Black King is necessary. And all of that dialogue, it actually makes more sense if the Black King says, now you're a brother to us, because then he's right next to the White Knight to be taken. So all of that dialogue that I just did, that I would do as the Black King. And reassign that. Which would mean that the earlier bits with the White Duke, the sort of expositionary bit in the scene we did at the very top of the session, we'd almost need a confidant, or we'd need something else, or the White Duke doesn't factor. There's possibly a way around that to make that work. Yeah. But that's an option, because otherwise this scene is very it's very clear who's on stage. It's the Black Knight and the White Knight, and they're mm-hmm. having a conflab, and the Black King's perhaps there in the background, but that's it, actually. That's all that actually does anything in this scene. And again, for an audio context, that makes a lot more sense. If this is a sort of private meeting. There's a lot of surfeit. There's a lot of Black Knight here doing Black Knight stand-up routine. basically, what the Black Knight's doing, he's basically just doing a series of stand-up routines. I'm not complaining.
I think people are there to see the Black Knight, so
yeah,
just setting him up even higher and higher for a longer and longer fall.
Mm.
He seems to be a descendant of the Vice.
Yeah.
Just a quick question about the text. There's a part I was just looking at the original versions that seems to not be in this one. Was that already cut from
another session? No, it just it depends. This one is usually more expansive, but occasionally there are a couple of the odd bits that have dropped out, which I need to look into the textual variants. But I have been noting variations as I go along.
There's a whole bit with the White Queen and the Black Bishop and the Black.
Oh no, that's a separate scene.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a bit we skipped. Don't worry about that. No.
Okay.
No, that's the other plot line, or the other subplot.
Got it.
Which we're not doing. Actually, we're not doing in these sessions at all. Actually, at this time, I'll dig into that in a future thing. Probably when we're looking at character stuff, because that's probably the next stage is actually to dig into some of these characters in detail rather than this sort of overall adaptation-y question. As I've now sort of got my head round the options that we've got. Broadly speaking, how was this scene landing? Lindsay, I suppose, is the one to ask, and maybe Tom and Liza, because you're the ones listening to it rather than actually saying very much during this scene. Do we get lost in the Black Knight? Lindsay.
Yeah, I mean, I would say I did a little. I was sort of following it and that was fine. But then when it got to the end where he says, "All right, now that's it, it's checkmate," I was kind of like, okay, I didn't quite see that bit as the triumph of language or action that would indicate the final blow. Maybe my just the fact that I'm unfamiliar with it, but I just I would say that could do with some pointing up in some way, maybe. Or
The important thing is the White Knight is leading the Black Knight to confess, basically. So in a sort of modern context, he's mm-hmm. wearing a wire. And his handler is on the other end, going, "We've got him. We've got his confession. Go, go, go!" And the vans swoop around the corner and they take him. You're right. It does need pointing the way it's performed to really make that land.
Because the White Knight sort of says it before. He says, "You know, the time is yet to come that ere I spoke what my heart meant," which is the White Knight saying, I'm a dissembler, you know, I'm a liar. So I think that's just what made me a little bit confused. I mean, I know it's obviously he's leading, but then how do we know that the White Knight is lying there? I mean, it just seems a bit, it just didn't seem quite like the kind of coup de grace that would be, you know, obviously what is going on, you know. So just that may just be me, though.
Yeah, Dan.
I think Liza had her hand up first.
Actually, no, I want to hear what you have to say.
No, please.
Dan, just speak.
This is something that I've I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. All I was saying is I have spoken. You have the conch.
It's... I feel like I'm definitely... can't be objective because I do know the play a little bit. I do feel like this is the kind of thing that when I was listening to it, if I did not know what the White Knight's role was, then I would be confused as hell as well. Mm. But because I know that the White Knight is there to trap, this is the kind of thing I would be on stage. It would be well known, should be well known to the audience that the White Knight is setting the Black Knight up in here. And there's a number of ways you can show that without saying it. I don't know how that would translate in an audio performance, but it would be blatantly obvious. I think to an audience member, it should be if it's a good production, that everyone's being set up right now.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I mean, it seems odd that Middleton having given us a White Knight and a White Duke who could talk to each other in aside, or to the audience in aside, that they just don't actually do that. Or apart from that opening gap before the they go into the Black House, as it were, that they're not playing that game. And it seems like it's a very obvious thing to do of just going, aha, we have got him on the end of the line kind of thing. And he doesn't do that. Middleton really doesn't give us any easy hooks to hang things on. He does his exposition backwards, so... It's weird. You can go through almost the whole of Act One not quite knowing what's going on until it's explicitly stated in Act Two what the plan is. And he keeps doing that throughout the play and even here. And I think on stage, you're right. It's with a proper production, it all fits into place. But for audio, where we need clear exposition, this one's a tricky one.
The thing, too, about it is that you would expect, I think because of when this was performed, that it's such a topical play that it almost doesn't need explaining to the audience members back then happening.
No, I don't think the topicality relates to the plot. The topicality relates to the characters being depicted, if that makes sense. The plot has very little to do with beyond that there is a, there are two houses and two etc. I don't see in that that the audience would get more than just sort of incidents rather than the overall sweep of the play. It's a bit of a red herring in terms of plot exposition. Liza.
Yeah, I see what you mean about the difficulties of depicting this clearly in an audio context. But one thing that is extremely topical is infiltration. And I think you can read the lack of asides as just very deep cover. It would be interesting to go through the play and look at whether the black characters have asides.
They do frequently, yeah.
So that their cover is, when they're being duplicitous, you know about it. So their espionage, but it means that their espionage is not as good because their cover is not as good. So I also think it's a little unfair to judge this particular scene on a cold read, where even a professional performance might fail unless very good text work had been done beforehand, just to know where the turning points of the scene are, what the structure is, and why... and how the characters are entrapping each other to make it very clear when a character is deluded, when they fall for something, when they are successfully led on.
Oh, yeah, I think there's a lot of play, the give and play. In fact, we'll run this scene again everyone will take a step to the left, or some of us will. The important thing is the coup de grace is what we have done hath been dissemblance ever. We've always been lying. That's the thing, and that's when the go, and that needs to be the moment that's pointed up. Everything before that, the White Knight is constantly just trying to pick, draw you in, but that's when the Black Knight really, really just lays it out in a relatively clear way. Whether it builds to a big moment there or not, I don't know. That might take some unpicking. So we'll see. So let's go to the top of the scene. I want to move people around a bit. Lindsay, I'd like you to be the Black Knight this time. And in fact, a straightforward swap. Actually, not even a swap. I'm going to say White. Dan, could you be the White Knight this time?
Great. Yes.
Tom, could you be the Black King and the Black Duke?
Yes.
Because they basically serve exactly the same function. And Liza, could you be the White Duke? The White Duke doesn't do an awful lot, but I'm going to keep the White Duke in play at the moment because I can't think off the top of my head a way of actually getting rid of him.
Throwing darts in lovers' eyes.
I think that covers all the bases. I think I apologise, Greg. I think you've played because I've taken characters away. You've drawn the short straw. But I could have taken the White Duke away. I could have just given that to the White Knight and see how that ran. But I think no. I think until I'm certain that I can do that sensibly, I'm going to keep him in play. So Act 5, Scene 3, from the top. Tom.
I was just. The Black Knight, all of Black Knight's speeches, I thought were very like Billy Whitelaw in Samuel Beckett's play. You know, that rattling off. I think if it were done at speed, it would be and quick enunciation. It would be, as I say, like the Beckett play. I forget what. Billy Whitelaw played it in a completely black theatre.
Not I?
Yeah.
I used to know they
took all the lights out of the theatre, even in the toilets. They gave nobody any excuse, and it.
Well, it's not.
And it just sounded like that. Actually, it was wonderful. Mm.
Okay, so we all know who we are, hopefully. Act 5, Scene 3, from the top. Let's see how this runs this time. See you with different voices.
You have enriched my knowledge, royal sir, and my content together.
Stead of riot, we set you only welcome. Surfeit is a thing that's seldom heard of in these parts.
I hear of the more virtue when I miss on't.
We do not use to bury in our bellies 200,000 ducats and then boast on't, or exercise the old Roman painful idleness with care of fetching fishes far from home. The golden-headed Coracine out of Egypt, the Salper from Ephesus, or the Pelamus, which some call summer whiting, from Chalcedon. Salmons from Aquitaine, helops from Rhodes, cockles from Chios, franked and fatted up with far and sapper, flour and cocted wine. We cram no birds, sir, Epicurean-like, enclose some creeks of the sea as Sergius Orata did. He that invented the first stews for oysters and other sea fish, who, besides the pleasure of his own throat, got large revenues by the invention, whose fat example the nobility followed. Nor do we imitate that arch gormandizer with 22 courses at one dinner, and betwixt every course he and his guests washed and used women, and then sat down and strengthened, lust swimming in their dishes, which no sooner was tasted but was ready to be vented.
Most impious epicures.
We commend rather of two extremes. The parsimony of Pertinax, who had half lettuces set up to serve again, or his successor Julian, that would make three meals of a lean hare, and often sup with a green fig and wipe his beard as we can. The old bewailers of excess in those days complained there was more coin bid for a cook than for a warhorse. But now cocks are purchased after the rate of triumphs, and some dishes after the rate of cooks. which must needs make some of your White House gormandizers, especially your wealthy, plump plebeians, like the hogs which Scaliger cites, that could not move for fat, so insensible of either prick or goad, that mice made holes to needle in their buttocks, and they ne'er felt 'em. There was once a ruler, Cyrene's governor, choked with his own paunch, which death fat Sanctius, king of Castile, fearing through his infinite mass of belly, rather chose to be killed suddenly by a pernicious herb, taken to make him lean, which old Corduba, king of Morocco, counseled his fear to, then he would hazard to be stunk to death, as that huge cormorant that was choked before him.
Well, you're as sound a spokesman, sir, for parsimony. Clean abstinence and scarce one meal a day as ever spake with Tom.
Censure him mildly, sir. 'Twas but a fine discourse.
Oh, he'll raise of it anything.
I shall be half afraid to feed hereafter.
Or I beshrew my heart, for I fear fatness, the fog of fatness, as I fear a dragon. The comeliness I wish for, that's as glorious.
Your course is wondrous trick, I should transgress, sure. Why to change my side, as you've much wrought me?
How you misprize! This is not meant to you, ward, you that are wound up to the height of feeding by clime and custom, are dispensed withal. You may eat kid, cabrito, calf, and tons. Eat and eat every day twice, if you please. Nay, the frank ten fatten with milk and corn, a riot which the inhabitants of Delos were first inventors of, or the crammed cockle.
Well, for the food, I'm happily resolved, but for the diet and my disposition, there comes a trouble. You will hardly find food to please that.
It must be a strange nature we cannot find a dish for, having policy, the master cook of Christendom, to dress it. Pray, name your nature's diet.
The first mess is hot ambition.
That's but served in puff paste. Alas, the meanest of our cardinal's cooks can dress that dinner. Your ambition, sir, can fetch no further compass than the world?
That's certain, sir.
We're about that already, and in the large feast of our vast ambition, we count but the white kingdom, whence you come from, the garden for our cook to pick his salads, the food's lean France, larded with Germany, before which comes the grave, chaste signory of Venice, served in, capon-like, white broth from our chief oven, Italy, the bake-meats, Savoy the salt, Geneva the chipped manchet, below the salt the Netherlands are placed, a common dish, at lower end of the table, for meaner pride to fall to. For our second course, a spit of Portugal's served in for plovers, Indians and Moors for blackbirds. All this while, Holland stands ready melted to make sauce on all occasions. When the voider comes, and with such cheer our full hopes we suffice, Zealand says grace for fashion. Then we rise.
Here's meat enough and conscience for ambition.
If there be any want, there's Switzerland, Polonia, and such pickled things will serve to furnish out the table.
You say well, sir. But here's the misery. When I've stopped the mouth of one vice, there's another gapes for food. I'm as covetous as a barren womb, the grave, or what's more ravenous.
Wherefore you, sir, call you that heinous that's good husbandry? Why? We make money of our faith, our prayers. We make the very deathbed by her comforts. No most dearly pay for all her pious counsels. Leave rich revenues for a few weak orisons, or else they pass unreconciled without em. Did you but view the vaults within our monasteries, you'd swear them Plutus, whom the fiction calls the Lord of Riches, were entombed there.
It's possible.
You
cannot walk for tons.
But how shall I bestow the vice I bring, sir? You quite forget me. I shall be shut out by your strict key of life.
Is yours so vile, sir?
Some that are pleased to make a wanton aunt call it infirmity of blood, flesh frailty. But certain there's a worse name in your books for it.
The trifle of all vices, the mere innocent, the very novice of this house of clay. Venery, if I but hug thee hard, I show the worst on't. 'Tis all the fruit we have here after supper. Nay, at the ruins of a nunnery once, 6,000 infants' heads found in a fish pond.
How?
Aye, how? How came they thither, think you? Huldric, Bishop of Augsburg, Inns' epistle to Nicholas I can tell you how. Maybe he was at cleansing of the pond. I can but smile to think how it would puzzle all mother maids that ever lived in those parts to know their own child's head. But is this all?
Are you ours yet?
Once more, and I am silenced. But this that comes now will divide us questionless. 'Tis 10 times worse than the forerunners.
Is it so vile there is no name ordained for it? Toads have their titles, and creation gave serpents and adders those names to be known by.
This of all others bears the hiddenest venom, the smoothest poison. I'm an arch dissembler, sir.
How?
'Tis my nature's brand. Turn from me, sir. The time is yet to come that ere I spoke what my heart meant.
And call you that a vice? Avoid all profanation, I beseech you. The only prime state virtue upon earth, the policy of empires. Oh, take heed, sir, for fear it take displeasure and forsake you. 'Tis like a jewel of that precious value, whose worth's not known but to the skillful lapidary. The instrument that picks ope princes' hearts and locks up ours from them with the same motion. You never came so near our souls as now.
Now you are a brother to us.
What we have done hath been dissemblance ever.
There you lie, then. The game's ours. We give thee checkmate by discovery, king, the noblest mate of all.
I'm lost. I'm taken.
And there's a great shout and a flourish. Huzzah! I'm thinking, you know, if we're leaning into a relatively modern thing, a sting operation here, then actually one of the things you can have, king, I give thee checkmate by discovery, king, the noblest mate of all. What we have done hath been dissemblance ever. I'm lost, you know, and you know, use his own words back at him kind of thing. That might work. I'm just throwing that in as an idea. That's not a definite. I'm just making a note. That's if we go for the Cold War idea. The recording devices would be a bit big, depending on which era. Yeah, how was that for clarity for people? Greg, you were mostly listening. How was that? Was that landing better that way? Others can join in as well.
I actually like it both ways. Once I got my head around the scenes, it was, I actually found that last scene quite easy. Whichever way around, but it sounded really good from just enjoying listening to everyone. I love those food speeches. They're utterly pointless in a lot of ways, but they are glorious when you hear them.
Really delivered there.
Yeah, I mean, is it we are getting, you know, if on a stage production, is it we're getting, you know, because, you know, have they just come from a feast, or is there a feast walking by as they're talking? You know, is this part of the temptation? Look, here is some stuff.
Well, it's also partly a metaphor, right? Because the world is the feast. Mm. So, you know, you could have a tablecloth that was painted with a map of the world or something. You could have, you know, they're gluttonous and they're going to eat the world and they're going to savor it.
Yes, you do feel that there should be a risk board on the floor or something, shouldn't there? Okay, so yeah, there's just in a sense it's relatively clear what's going on in the scene. It's just a lot of scene. It's a lot of work to do on that, and then really it's going to be a matter of actually how it comes out in the edit. Actually, as to what stays, you know, you just record the scene and then you play. There were a couple of actually minor textual variants as well. So there's a couple of lines that weren't in the version we've been reading. So that's something for me to play around with you, and see where that comes in. Any other thoughts about this closing scene and clarity generally? I don't know if I still don't get the sensation that we're building to that final taking of the king at the end there.
Yeah,
I don't think that's a performance thing. I just don't think it's written that way. Sorry, Liza, then Lindsay.
Just that, I mean, if we can establish up front that I don't know, because I wasn't present when any of these two characters' other storyline was read. But there has to be a way of establishing that the game is to get the Black Court themselves to admit that it's all lies, that it's all false. Just that the dissembling thing, that's the coup that ends the game. There has to be a way to establish that.
Yeah, because it's just that should be coming out of the dialogue. That should be part of, you know, that's the entire point of the White Knight and the Black Knight's dialogue. And it doesn't quite feel that it's building to that admission. And that admission doesn't quite land. Lindsay?
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking of this in audio terms. If it could work that the start of this is sort of quite spacious and open, and the sense that, you know, they've just got up from the table and it's all going wonderfully well, and just gradually gets more intimate and quieter in the sense that it's just these two characters kind of, you know, just absolutely in tete-a-tete, you know, seduction mode from the Black Knight. And then for it to go big and wide again, when the White Knight says, now I've got you, it's checkmate, that kind of thing. I mean, that might help with it from an audio perspective, just to create that sense of publicness versus intimacy as a thought.
Yes, no, I like that. There is actually a line that was missing in our version that leads to that as well. In fact, the White Knight at one point says, I tell you in private.
At one point. Okay.
And the Black Knight replies, oh, we're your cabinets. You know, we will enfold your secret. Tell me, whisper in my ear, little chickadee.
Well, there you go. Yeah, so it is in there, really. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But even so, it's that building towards the end, and it's the White Knight. It seems that the White Knight needs to be really, you know, constantly, Really? Tell me more.
Was it love at first sight?
Yes. Tell me more. No. Sorry. I almost started that myself.
Random modern reference. Yeah.
Okay. We are at the end of, I say, this first initial little phase of just trying to pick apart certain questions of this most tricksy of plays. It's a kind of play where putting on stage is relatively straightforward, but it's a tricky one for the audio medium, which is why we're doing this process and doing it lengthily and expansively. And there will be more of this kind of thing later on as I start wrestling a potential version that we will start wrestling with and start looking at characters and other things. The plan generally is that we will work towards actually recording a full cast audio adaptation. A process which will begin next year with the aim that there will be a release in 2024. That's the date that we're working for reasons of anniversaries, because that will be the 400th anniversary of the original performance. And the original performance season. In an ideal world, we'd also be working towards some kind of live staged event as well. But let's crawl before we can walk, and this is all grist for the mill for that. So if you at home have thoughts or ideas of your own that you'd like to throw into the ring, by all means get in touch, admin@beyondshakespeare.org, or you can contact us on Twitter, because that's there as well, and other social media platforms exist where we are at Beyond Shakes, and there should be some additional resources eventually appearing on our website all about our potential production of this. You can support our work by supporting us on Patreon, patreon.com/beyondshakespeare, or even you can bung us a coffee on ko-fi.com/beyondshakespeare there. And there may be specific links online for fundraising for these future productions of this coming up in the future. All that remains is to thank the wonderful readers for all their wonderful thoughts. Thank you very much, everyone, and goodbye.